Critics say using race, ethnicity, or national origin to indicate whether a person may be a criminal is unconstitutional. But many security and legal experts say profiling is key to discovering would-be terrorists. The law is somewhat ambiguous, but it does allow considerable leeway. NPR's Tobias Smith reports.
The law on racial profiling is most clear at the extremes. Take, for example, the classic case of driving while black. If a police officer stops African-American drivers on the highway just because he assumes black men are more likely to be criminals carrying illegal drugs, that's the kind of racial profiling the courts have ruled unconstitutional. On the other hand, if a police officer gets a report that two Asian men robbed a bank and goes searching for two Asian-looking men, that's perfectly legal police work. Between those two examples, however, there is a world of ambiguity, including whether race or ethnicity can be considered in the post-September 11th hunt for terrorists.
What this case points up is the difficulty of drawing the line.
David Cole is a law professor at Georgetown University Law Center.
I think much of what's going on right now falls somewhere in between, because in a sense we do have an identification. We know that there is this organization. We know that the organization contains predominantly Arab and Muslim men, and so it may well not be racial profiling.
That's about as definitive as you get on the issue. Even the laws that ban racial profiling are ambiguous about where they draw the line. It's clear that singling people out only because of their race or ethnicity crosses that line. But what if race is one of six or seven factors? And what if it's one of two? With no clear-cut legal answer, many on the front lines, like airline pilots, for example, are left to figure it out for themselves, much to the dismay of some passengers.
It is frightening and it is saddening, because I shouldn't be at the mercy of a pilot or a police officer that can pull me out of an airplane for no reason.
Vahid Zoravandi is one of dozens of passengers who say they've been unfairly kicked off airplanes since September 11th because of the color of their skin. Zoravandi was born in Iran and is now a U.S. citizen doing computer work in Texas. He describes himself as very Middle Eastern looking. Last fall, he says he was removed from a flight after he was told that the pilot was uncomfortable with him on board. Zoravandi was eventually put on a later flight. He was told that pilot didn't mind having him on board.
I felt so humiliated, alienated, that I just wanted to melt and hide somewhere that nobody can see me.
The airline declined to comment on Zoravandi's case. In general, airlines say pilots have broad discretion on who flies with them, but that race does not figure into the equation. But Zoravandi's attorney, Christy Lopez, doesn't buy it.
It is one of the most blatant cases of illegal discrimination that most civil rights attorneys will ever see, unless they were practicing back in the early 60s in the South. Just as standing in the back of a bus is not a mere inconvenience, it's also the case that being asked to get off an airplane and fly on a different airplane because someone thinks you might be a terrorist, that's not a mere inconvenience either.
In part because of the nation's troubled racial past, the courts have set a high standard for any race-based decision-making. First, the government has to prove it has a really good reason or compelling state interest. That's an easy case to make in the hunt for terrorists, says George Washington University professor Jonathan Turley. It's much easier, he says, than justifying racial profiling, for example, in the war on drugs.
Quite frankly, we can let a nickel bag get by, or even some cocaine get by, in order to avoid the social costs of having racial profiling. The costs are a little different at an airport.
The courts have also said that for race-based decision-making to be constitutional, it also has to be absolutely necessary. That is, it will definitely get the job done, and there's definitely no other way to do it. Here, too, Turley says, a good case can be made.
There are 40 million people that travel by air in this country. We cannot stop each one of them and make an individualized determination of risk. We have to develop some type of profile. The fact is, profiling is a legitimate statistical device, and it's a device that we may have to use if we're going to have a meaningful security process at these airports.
But critics say profiling Middle Eastern or Arab-looking passengers will not stop terrorism. Consider Richard Reed, the shoe bomber, who's of Jamaican and British descent. Or, for example, Oklahoma City bomber Timothy McVeigh. Terrorists don't always look the part. But Yale University Law School professor Peter Schuck says a profile does not have to fit every single terrorist.
There's no question, it seems to me, that we use stereotypes, that we have to use stereotypes. And the question is, how good are they? But over time, the stereotypes on which we base profiling ought to become more refined and more targeted. So now, for example, it turns out that some suicide bombers may be women. So now we'll have to broaden the criteria.
You have your passport, please? Mr. Mali, is that how you pronounce your name?
Yes. On the ground at security checkpoints like this one at Logan Airport, it may be that public opinion is doing more to restrict racial profiling than the law. Public sentiment has changed since September 11th. There are more complaints of discrimination, but there's also more tolerance for racial profiling, and it doesn't always break down along racial lines. This man, Haji Al-Frehi, moved to the United States from Iraq 8 years ago. He says he and his mother, who's wearing traditional Muslim dress, expect to be singled out for extra scrutiny, but they don't mind.
I don't care. If they ask me, it's okay. If they want anything, it's okay. Because they have to. Everything they do for secure to the country of the people, it's okay. I mean, this land give us a lot. So my mother, she was sick. Look at her. She's very healthy now. So it's okay.
Ultimately, many experts say racial profiling is inevitable, whether or not it's sanctioned or even conscious. Law enforcement always has and always will act on hunches, even ones that may be based on unfair stereotypes, says Stanford Law professor Rick Banks. Rather than deny it, he says, better to come up with an explicit policy that would codify when and how skin color can be considered. Banks says that would bring racial profiling above board and allow for better monitoring.
The issue is so emotional and the stakes are so great, we are likely to have great abuses from the exercise of discretion. So it would be better to go to a system that has less discretion rather than more.
But even with the clearest guidelines to restrict racial profiling, enforcement of those guidelines is another matter. Proving wrongful discrimination can be as difficult as nailing down what went through a security agent's head in the course of a split-second decision and trying to parse out how much weight he gave to a person's race versus his shifty eyes or nervous pacing. Ultimately, it may be that racial profiling is as difficult to prove as it is to define. Tovia Smith, NPR News, Boston.